on demand.
Hi, I'm Jim Stroud. Welcome to the Recruiter's Lounge. The Recruiter's Lounge is a podcast of news, interviews, and commentary on the recruiting industry, and it was designed with you in mind. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your time in the Recruiter's Lounge. This episode of the Recruiter's Lounge is brought to you by Affinity Circles. Affinity Circles connects over 13 million people through an exclusive network of online communities representing leading academic and professional organizations. With In-Circle recruiting services, employers can target quality passive candidates and benefit from trusted employee referrals. To learn more about them, visit their website at www.affinitycircles.com. Affinity Circles is not just who you know, it's how you know them.
Hello, and welcome once again to another exciting episode of the Recruiter's Lounge Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Stroud, and sitting with me in the lounge chair is my co-host, Karen Matten. How are you, Karen?
Jim, thank you. I'm doing well, and I'm glad to be on board.
So glad you're here with me. I'm getting ready for the holidays that are coming up, you know, gobble, gobble, and all that. Do you have any plans yourself?
No, actually, I'm just having some family over, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah?
Can't wait to eat.
Well, I have my list of plans, and my plan list is to eat, to sleep, and then to repeat as necessary.
Okay.
And that's going to be pretty much what I do this round.
And I think that sounds like a good plan.
Oh, it's a lovely plan. And, you know, in between the eating and sleeping and repeating as necessary, I'm going to reach over, I'm going to pick up this new book that came to my attention. It's called Talent Force, a new manifesto for the human side of business. It's written by Rusty Ruff and Hank Stringer. And it just so happens that in the lounge chair next to me is Hank Stringer. So if you would, Hank, please say hello to the audience.
Hello, audience. How are you today? And happy Thanksgiving.
The audience says hello back, Hank. How you been, by the way?
Been doing really well. Quite busy with the book, finishing that, and then have started a new company that we're very excited about. And as we all know, the recruitment industry keeps us all very busy right now.
No doubt. Now, tell me about this book, Talent Force. Tell me a little bit about it.
It's very interesting. In a previous company that I founded back in 1996, Hire.com, one of my earliest clients was Rusty Ruff, then VP, Senior Vice President of HR at Electronic Arts. And Rusty and I became very fast friends and interested and equally passionate about recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
We started speaking once a week, every Wednesday morning. And after about a year of talking about the market, what's going on, taking notes, we looked down and realized that we might have compiled enough to consider writing a book. And so we did.
Okay.
And that's how the book Talent Force got started. And that's how it ultimately was published.
So your focus is on basically how to reach and meet those targets. But I heard that you guys are also focusing on basically, you know, we're looking at how the baby boomers are leaving and what we need to do to try to fill the gap between with the baby boomers leaving. Is that correct?
To a degree, Karen, we took a brief look at some historical evidence of where talent or a talent force played very key roles in the growth of our company and economy. For instance, the growth of the Transcontinental Railroad.
Okay.
Had it not been for the Civil War ending and a number of military personnel who had been trained in supply chain logistics,
mm-hmm.
Could not have built from the east west the railroad. At the same time, had it not been for the gold rush and a number of talented individuals that we were compelled to come to the United States from China, would we have had the talent force to build the railroad from the west east? And so we begin to look at that. We begin to look at, as you describe, the shifts in talent due to demographics, due to global economic competition, due to cultural change and the fact that the world is changing, the available talent is changing, and that companies have to react differently to build the talent they need to accomplish their goals.
Now, I have a question on that, too. How do you perceive, like, so you mentioned China, and let's bring India. How do you perceive America's going to stand up to them, say, in 5 or 10 years?
I personally, Karen, and this goes to a conversation over maybe two bottles of wine the other night, so this may not be that good, but truthful. When we look at China, we find that there is a dearth of mid-level management. So if you talk to the large U.S. companies, technical companies specifically, over there right now, they are recruiting from all over the world to fill that gap.
Here in
the United States, we do have a number of individuals, baby boomers, 75, 80 million, who are entering retirement, that are going to want or need to continue to work and provide a very interesting talent force that could assist in filling that gap in China. So I see it, frankly, as more of a merge of based on access and need for talent to accomplish goals.
Jim, do you mind if I kind of hog this?
No, please go ahead.
Okay.
Please go ahead.
This is a subject that I really feel kind of strongly on, too, because someone once recently said, because I have a firm belief that, you know, with supply and demand, there really isn't this war for talent, as some believe, right? That as we see baby boomers tend to not want to be able to retire, as you mentioned, and they, but they also will probably be utilizing less on the sports equipment, and they start, there's less supply and demand. But then what I also kind of see is, like a friend of mine said, if you take all the people from China and India who also are moving here, they can, too, help with our supply and demand and kind of cross that, offset what we may consider a not-so-necessary war for talent. But maybe the war for talent we have in America is more that the companies aren't paying enough on the salaries and they really aren't taking care of the people here at home, and that's why we have issues. What do you think?
Maybe. Let me go to two pieces of interesting, not evidence, but concepts. I believe it's Sylvia Hewitt who wrote the book On Ramps, Off Ramps, and begins to talk about the number of individuals in the United States today who are of Asian and Indian descent, who have lived here for a number of years, been trained, great technical talent, who, as they are getting older, are looking to and are beginning to immigrate and move back to their countries of origin. And some estimate that that number could be as high over the next 10 years or so, as high as 20 million technical workers. That is a huge amount being taken away from the workforce in the United States, the technical talent force in the United States, something to consider as well. Take the CEO of Lockheed, wrote a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal a year and a half to 2 years ago, and he said one out of every three of his engineers are at retirement age. Now, if they retire or not at retirement age, and he anticipates they'll retire, in order to keep his company competitive in the market, over the next 10 years, he would need to hire 167,000 new technically trained engineers who could also meet security clearance.
Okay.
Difficult in the United States because today we are educating just over 62,000 individuals with technical degrees out of our colleges. And I don't know the percentage, but not all of that staff or that technical talent is in a position to pass security clearance requirements, either through citizenship or through DWIs in high school. Can't pass the muster for security clearance. And, of course, now we add Homeland Security to competing for that talent. We also add biotech to competing for the science talent, as well as expansion of medical services competing for that talent to take care of all of us baby boomers who are growing older. So I think I can agree that the war for talent from basic numbers can certainly be looked at and said, well, maybe not. However, we can look at certain verticals and in certain areas and think about the global competition mm-hmm. that causes us to say, we really need to understand that and be prepared as a contingency to compete to ensure that we have the right talent on board to be competitive in the marketplace.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to step back a little bit to something you said earlier about people who are educated here in the States and they go back to their other countries, and it's sort of like mm-hmm. a brain drain from this country.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of this trend, or what do you think of the possibility, Hank, of U.S. companies just building more offshore representation on different countries, say in India and China, and then just sending the money back to the United States, sort of doing the same thing that they are doing?
You know, I don't know, Jim. I think one of the things is go to where the talent go to the talent.
Sure.
So where is the talent?
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. As a result of the book, I had an opportunity to speak and spend time in Moscow.
Okay.
Last year, just about this time a year ago. Well, I learned through you know they're educating 250,000 individuals a year with technical degrees.
Hmm.
So is India.
But is the education, is it comparable to what we're looking at? I mean, what about...
You know, I think that's a great question, Karen. I think that's a great question. And if you look at some of the I'm told, and I'm not technical, but some of the top schools in India, yes, are comparable to some of our technical schools here. And then we are seeing some reverse flow of professors and teachers... who have been trained at some of our better schools going over there as well. We talk about in the book, and this may not compare quite the same, but the top 10 universities in terms of numbers of students are located in India and in China, are in Asia,
mm-hmm.
and each of these colleges have over, or universities have over 100,000 students, and each of these utilize the latest long-distance learning in terms of technology, et cetera. Now, I think we're catching up with that, but education in those areas is huge, and I think they're rapidly ramping up.
And that's because it's also kind of free most of the time. Now, there's an interesting thing that you might be interested to hear about, too. I was reading that Kennedy was getting really upset in regards to the fact that we are educating so many of these individuals that they end up taking our knowledge back to where their homeland is to become better than us. And he says that is due to the use of the abuse of the H-1B visas and the educational visas. Like for individuals will come over for, they're supposed to come here for 2.5 years or et cetera, but they'll come for a couple of months, 6, 7, 8 months, they gain all the information and then take it home. Have you seen that to be a problem as well? Because Kennedy's like, he's really boycotting many of the companies who are staffing firms who utilize or only are working with H-1B visas.
And who is this again that's doing this?
This is Senator Kennedy. What happened is there was a recent bust of a staffing firm. They were actually doing $2 million in a fine because what they had done with some fraudulent visas, et cetera, and they were abusing the H-1B visas, too. They were, like, bringing people in only for a couple months and then having them go home between these transfers of visas, okay? And so Kennedy was kind of is cracking down on this. He's saying, you know, we're educating these people on our processes, and they're to make them smarter and better than we are.
But you can't really get away from that, though, can you? I mean, I'm sorry, I'm cutting off, Hank. Go ahead.
No. That's fine. I think it's an interesting discussion. I think that we are. I always go back to who and what we are, and you know we're a country of freedoms and democracy and liberty, and with some open doors with some rules, and if those rules are complied by, makes perfect sense to me. If there is fraudulent activity that goes on, that's not good. I do think raising the water raises all boats, and increasing the knowledge base and economic capability all over the world is the right thing to do, and it allows us all better opportunity to help each other. So I guess I'm not one that minds so much seeing some of the growth in technology advancements, even if it comes from things that we've done here. I just think we have to be prepared to compete.
Mm-hmm.
Competition causes great innovation and great opportunity. So
one of the things you mentioned, you talked about in your book, was this cultural obsession with work. Can you go into a bit more detail about that?
Well, I think people are going to care more about what they do. That doesn't mean necessarily, as I look to my 11 and 13-year-old children at home, that they're dying to get out there and go to work.
Right.
Although I'm pleased with my kids, they do great. What we say is that we are entering a time that is more transparent. People can know more about work, can know more about their value. We suggest to companies that the power of the recruitment process historically has sat in the seat of the recruiter in the company. The power may be transferring to the talent.
Mm-hmm.
So be prepared, company, for talent to be able to walk in and sit down in an interview. And we've already seen many examples of this.
Sure.
Saying that the talent knows about your company, knows what's good about your company, knows what questions to ask. So I think an example that we use is that a talent may come in to the company and say, I understand you are trying to hire me as a product manager over this line of product. I understand as a public company, say in this example, that you have stated and you expect revenue from this product to exceed X over the next 5 quarters. Based on other research on blogs and individuals I've talked to, I understand and know that you are a quarter behind schedule. In order for me to come on and to accomplish the goals that you have and to get you ahead of schedule, if I do that, I would like to be compensated at X.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe that the talent will be knowledgeable, will be confident, and will have the data to be able to come in and have those types of conversations with companies. Some of the things I'm working on right now, I expect in 5 years an individual will be able to come in and say, I know exactly how many programmers there are who can do what I do in this region. Therefore, I know what my value is to you to get the job accomplished right now.
Really a change in the Generation Y, as we call it, versus the baby boomer generation, when you say in that an early generation, the company set the rules and for lack of better words, the older generation sort of complied to that, as opposed to now a lot of the Generation Yers, they're trying to dictate what should be done. At least that's how it seems to me.
Yeah, Rusty and I look for a term to kind of describe and define all that,
mm-hmm.
and what we came up with was something that we call arrogance of supply.
That's a good one.
We've all lived there. I remember in some of my early recruiting days in the 90s, early 90s at Dell, I distinctly remember a conversation between a recruiter and a hiring authority where the hiring authority asked the recruiter, what happened to that candidate?
Mm-hmm.
And the recruiter turned to the hiring authority and kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, well, the candidate fell through the cracks. And they both looked at each other and shrugged and went on. Now, the hiring authority felt very confident that there was enough talent out there for him to get that position filled and replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And his attitude towards recruitment, his attitude towards the processes that had been built around it, and frankly, the systems, and now with OFCCP, some of the rules that have been built, have been built and established around the fact that there's plenty of talent. The truth is, whether, Karen, it's a talent war or not, there is not as much available talent today. Whether it's because there's all of them are working or there's not enough, it's not that way.
You see, well, the thing.
So, just 1 second. So, you have to change and think about what do I have to do to attract that talent.
There you go.
And we say to the companies, we say. And you can't short shrift this. You have to be truthful and honest. The companies, you have to be who and what you say you are. From this point in time going forward, if there's a hiring authority in a company out there listening to this, you can't be false. You have to be true to your culture and who you, and what you say you are, and you have to attract the kind of talent that you need to go accomplish the goal.
You know, and I really got to say something about that because I when you say you've got to be true, I also think about it more along their needs versus wants, you know, recognizing because, you know, they would say, well, I need to have a $20,000 candidate to fill a $2 job. And quite frequently I'm like, okay, for example, I see a company that would say, I need a bachelor's degree for a secretarial position. Okay, and yet we're only going to pay her $20,000. Well, that's why, to me, I perceive it as a war for talent. Because, you know, these are ridiculous requests that sometimes these companies are saying they need, when it's really not a need, it's just a want. Obviously, that's not really an objective to get the job done.
Well, what we believe is that you are going to see a network, and interestingly enough, we begin to describe this in the book Talent Force, where in the later chapters we talked about personalization.
Mm-hmm.
But we're beginning to see a network now, and we're looking to the future, where you as a recruiter working with that hiring authority can sit down with a computer and say, okay,
mm-hmm.
you want this administrator with a bachelor's degree to pay $20,000, let me show you right now in real time how many individuals there are out there who match that skill and who also would be interested in working in your environment for this opportunity in real time. And you'll be able to show that hiring authority, well, you know what, if you ask for the bachelor's degree and you're willing to pay that amount of money, guess what? There's not anyone who wants that opportunity today.
Absolutely. I mean, you were so right on because that was where, you know, I was looking at these, and you're right on because I was looking at the long-term unemployment statistics, right? And they're kind of like the highest we've ever been in the country. But and I think a lot of it, too, is because a lot of these people, you know, they've had 100, you know, say 20, 30 years experience, and they want to make the salaries that they're familiar to. But I see such low salaries nowadays. It just seems so stressful, you know, distressing sometimes.
You're saying low salaries compared to a previous decade or low salaries?
Yeah, I mean, haven't you seen in compared to inflation as well, especially?
Right.
I mean, look at when was the last time we even raised, now are we raising the minimum wages? And it's like 25 years later.
Well, see, you have to watch me a little bit because I'm an entrepreneur who starts up companies, and I'm in the technology area, and so one, I see high salaries in technology because we're having to vie for talent that a lot of other organizations are vying for. So I see salaries pretty strong.
Okay.
On the other hand, just to make sure, I'm also one who believes in supply and demand and companies and selling their goods and items, paying and raising minimum wage based on that. I'm not personally one that advocates the federal government dictating what we get and should pay individuals. So, that's just me personally. So,
now you mentioned Sorry, go ahead, Karen.
Go ahead now. You go ahead now.
Yeah, you mentioned, Hank, that you start companies. Can you go a bit more into the type of work you're doing in that regard?
Sure. Just a quick history. Started recruiting in 1979.
They were recruiting back then? I'm sorry.
There were recruiters. We used phones, and believe it or not, I can tell people what it was like when I saw the first fax machine.
Wow.
The company that sold the first fax machine that I saw?
Mm-hmm.
Exxon.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Exxon quit. Moved to Austin, started recruiting for Tandem in 89, started utilizing the Internet in 89. Light bulbs went off, saw the value, built technology, and started building technology in 94. Started Hire.com in 96, and went on, sold that company to Authority in 05, wrote the book with Rusty, and then a little over a year ago, God looked down on me and gave me the opportunity to be a founding member of this new company, It's Big. And I have never been more excited with the group and the organization and the technology that we're bringing to the sourcing industry.
Nice.
I'm very impressed. And by the way, I also started off, with the fax machine. I didn't just do it with the letters, but we did it with the fax.
Was it one of those old round cylindrical things that took 3 to 7 minutes per page?
Yeah, the one they had to tear off the long paper. Yeah,
yep.
I did start off with that. I'm an old-timer. It took me a while to get used to the computer.
Yeah. Well, you know, we think we're pretty neat having all that experience.
Mm-hmm.
I can promise you most of the people that hear this who are a lot younger, they don't think it's all that neat at all.
No, they think we're old guys and we don't know anything.
Well, see, you can tell them that no matter all the technology, it's still about relationship recruiting.
Well, I think it's about relationship recruiting, and what I'm most excited about, and Jim, you've known me for a while, I think, but
sure.
This technology at It's Big allows us a platform. And if talent is getting the power in the market, and I believe they are, it gives us the opportunity to start treating talent with a high degree of graciousness,
mm-hmm.
which is something that I've been writing about and talking about for a long time, because the systems and the processes and the amounts of data coming into companies has not allowed us to treat people like people.
Mm.
And I think that's wrong, because recruiters, those on the front line, encounter and talk with more people than maybe any other industry, or as much as any other industry, I'm sure, in the United States. And if you go to candidates and you ask them what they think of their experiences with companies, of sending in a resume, for instance, into a website, you know what the answer is, and the answer isn't good. The answer isn't good. For the majority of them, they have a very bad experience. And so I'm very excited about how technology allows us to treat people in a very gracious manner by giving them control over their information and what they do with it. And it really is a new way of thinking about interacting with talent.
How can someone get a look at the company you're working on now? What's the website?
Yeah, the name of the company is It's Big, and that's ITZBIG. The reason for the name, we couldn't come up with one, so we said, well, it's a big idea, it's a big deal, it's a big market, it's a big change, it matters, and it's big to everyone. So we were able to get the URL, and we named the company It's Big. It's a sourcing network that truly allows talent to come in as a quiet working professional, anonymously profile with the network, never having to share their name or information with the network, but to be aware of opportunities that match what they're looking for. And when they are asked, or they do show interest in a company, and a company says, please send me your resume, their information goes directly to the company, does not come into the network to be monetized. And we think that that's what talent wants. If you can give me just a moment, there's got to be a reason why 80% of the people in the United States utilize the Internet, yet only a very small fraction of working professionals in the United States actually feel good about interfacing with the network when it comes to career movement and career management. Something's wrong. And we believe that it's how you deal with and how you allow individuals to have control over how they're going to use their information in learning about opportunities that match exactly what they're looking for.
Wow, that sounds like a very big deal. So it sounds like you named the company correctly.
It is.
Well, Hank Stringer, recruiter, author, serial entrepreneur, sort of a renaissance man here in the HR field. Thank you for your time here in the Recruiter's Lounge.
And I bow down to this man's experience. Anybody who's seen those many recessions and been so successful, hello, you're down. You're okay to me.
Karen, I'm just old. And God bless me.
Actually,
in 70.
Kids that age is what makes me old.
Well, I'll tell you what. God bless me in 1979 when I learned about recruitment right out of college and I entered the industry. And I told myself then, I said, I'm going to give myself 5 years, and either I'll learn that I don't like it,
uh-huh,
or I'll learn that it's something that I want to do for the rest of my life. And I learned that I became very passionate about our industry, and I think it's one of the most, if not the most important positions,
mm-hmm,
in business today,
mm-hmm,
and will continue to be that way for some time. And all we all have to do is strive to get better, retain the curiosity it takes, learn every day, smile at people, and we'll do great.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks again. Until next time, we'll listen to you good people or see you. I guess what am I trying to say? I'm getting tongue-tied here. I'm just having such a good time here. Thanks for your time in Recruiter's Lounge.
Well, that's it for this show. You've been a wonderful audience. If you like what you heard, love what you heard, or just plain hate what you just heard, let me know. Your feedback matters. You can reach me through my website at jimstroud.com/podcast. That's jimstroud.com/podcast. So until next time, I'm Jim Stroud, and you're not.
Radio, Talent Zoo.
Innovative audio on demand.